Hey, welcome. Thanks for listening to the River Talk podcast. We're back for another week. Podcast hosted by Zach Collier, Priscilla Macy, and me, Eric Weiseff. This week, our big topic or main topic is salvaging the paddle trip. When something goes sideways or things change or whatever, what do you do and how do you make it work? So we'll get to that. But first, we'd like to start with news of the week. So, Zach, Priscilla, what do we got?
I'll start with something quick. The Idaho snowpack seems to be over. I'm not sure what happened. We had this glorious snowpack, but it seems to be on the decrease, which for me is good because it makes our Middle Fork trips like predictable and safer. So I'm happy it's over. But Eric, you're out there. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, we've been doing guide training the last week. We started on the 6th on the Riggin stretch. And when we started trips on the 6th, it was a little over 50,000. And it's now, what, the 11th? And it's right around 30,000. So in like 5 days, the change we've seen on the river has been absolutely amazing. Like, there's a couple rapids that were, you know, like reasonably spicy when we started. And now it's like, you'll let the newbie row the boat through because whatever. It's no big deal. It's cool, but I think I'm with you. I think it's over. Cool. Northwest River Forecast Center seems to think it's over. We're on the down. We're heading down, going down fast. I was really worried about, you know, the salmon still being over 25,000 at the 1st of July, and now I'm thinking it might be like at 15, which is, you know, a little lower, far lower than we expected it to be. But again, I'm with you. I'm not necessarily against it because it makes a lot of things predictable.
Yeah, predictable is really good. You know, some people told me it's been really cold in Idaho, and then when it warms up, the water level is going to come up. Any thoughts about that? What are people talking about?
I don't think so. Okay. I think that we had that big storm in April where everything flooded here, like everything low. The big salmon didn't, but like all small rivers did. And I think that burned off all the low elevation snow, and that was it. Like, that's where all that snow went, was one big hit.
Cool.
I think it's over. I think that cold weather thing, 'cause there's just not that much snow. Like, there's not that much snow up in the mountains anymore. So it's summer. We've hit summer and we're having summer flows and everything else.
That makes me happy.
Yeah. I'm into it.
On the flip side of that, California has lots of snow. Or snowpack, 190% of their average.
Awesome.
Is what I read, and it's the largest June snowpack since 2011. So hopefully that doesn't all melt at once and we'll be able to have a longer season out there. There is a new series of stamps, Wild and Scenic River stamp series. You can order those online now. Pretty cool. Pretty pictures.
I ordered like 40 of them. They're amazing. Like, hopefully I have stamps for 2 years. They're beautiful stamps.
Yeah, they are really well done.
Yeah.
And they're like really big, so you can actually see the pictures. Oregon House Bill 2835 passed, which was the bill that I was working on with Oregon Outdoors and American Whitewater, which requires a public closure process for waterway access on state lands, requires them to consider access in feasibility of access for new bridge construction or reconstruction, and requires them to produce a report on access site openings and closures in the state.
Well, good job, Priscilla. Congratulations. That's a huge, huge deal.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited about it.
Thank you for putting all that time and effort in and doing it. I mean, getting a bill passed is a big deal. So big congratulations to you and everybody else.
Yeah, yeah. Big thanks to everyone who helped. Definitely wouldn't have been done without a bunch of other people helping. The last bit of news is around the North Fork Championship, which is this weekend. American Whitewater staff and board members are out there currently. There's a Wild River Symposium tonight at Payette Brewing in Boise, talking a little bit about the story of the North Fork Payette, where it actually was proposed for a hydropower development project, which obviously didn't happen, which paddlers celebrate. And then there's also the annual Whitewater Awards and the paddling championship, which is one of the bigger paddling competitions in the world on whitewater. So I've never gone. I keep trying to make it every year, and it's just always at a time of year that's impossible for me to go. So I know all my friends and colleagues are out there, and I'm sure they're having a great time.
Eric, you going? It's not that far for you.
Headed to Oregon on Saturday, so unfortunately I'm going to miss it. But yeah, no, I mean, everybody's showing up. Like, you can just, like, it's all the talk up here, you know, hanging out. We were going out. We went to pizza in McCall the other night, and it's like everybody's talking about North Fork Championship. I was driving down to Boise last week and picked up a hitchhiker on the side of the road who a kayaker who had his boat in tow. And it was Todd Wells heading down to, you know, get ready to go practice for the North Fork Championship. Cool. And it's kind of everybody showing up. So it should be a good time. If you're in the area, I would head out that way.
Oh, yeah.
And did you say that symposium's tonight, Priscilla?
Yeah.
Tonight, Tuesday.
Yeah. At Payette Brewing in Boise.
Yeah, that's a good. Thanks for saying tonight, Tuesday, because you could be listening to this in July and be like, oh, tonight?
Let's drive down there. Yeah. Sorry. Right. Yeah, forget about
tonight, June 11th, 2019.
Yeah.
So, and on that note, the Redside Foundation, Emerald's been driving around the state doing like guide nights kind of in different places. I think there was one in Stanley last week and one in Salmon last week and maybe one in Boise. I don't know. Yeah. But there's one tonight in Riggins. So if you're into trivia and supporting healthy guides and you're near Riggins tonight on Tuesday, there's an event going on in Riggins tonight.
Cool.
So there's that.
All right.
Yeah. So should we do some mailbag? We got a couple of emails.
Yeah. I can start. I'm excited. We're getting enough emails from listeners that we can start a new category of the podcast called Mailbag. Does that sound good to you guys?
Sure.
Yeah. Maybe we'll
people keep emailing us at therivertalkpodcast@gmail.com.
Yep. Please do. These emails are fun. And I'm gonna respond. I'll read the one from Max the Pack Rafter, who we've had a few discussions with, and he writes, in the latest episode you suggested a reply from me about pack raft, so here it is. I totally agree with you. There are a lot more videos of pack rafters pinballing and surviving rapids than pack rafters styling rapids, unfortunately, but that does not mean they cannot be paddled authentically. Pack rafts were not originally designed to cross lakes. They're designed for going down rivers, with the first prototypes being made for adventure races where people could float down rivers to go faster. Thor from Alpaca could expand on that. The advantage of a pack raft over an inflatable kayak is that pack rafts have T-zips, so you can store your gear inside the tubes and it actually sits in the boat lower on the water, making it perform better, which is why I would use a pack raft over an IK to go down the Grand Canyon. Yes, you can fit a Groover inside the tubes of a pack raft. And finally, I haven't tried the back raft, so I can't comment on that. And he says, I hope you guys have a stonking boating season. I'm not sure what stonking is, but I think that's a cool thing.
That's a good word.
Yeah, and so it's news to me. I thought pack rafts were designed to cross lakes, and so that's cool. They're designed for going down rivers. I guess adventure races make sense. I've thought a lot about the pack rafts putting gear inside the tubes. I mean, have you guys seen that, where you can actually get zippers and put the gear in the tubes and then inflate them?
I mean, it seems super clever in principle, like... It's a great use of otherwise unused space.
Okay.
So just from a, like, how do we more efficiently use the space we have? It's super clever.
Yeah.
It feels like there's about a dozen problems with it, but I haven't actually used it, so I don't know for sure. But it certainly feels like you're putting a lot of trust in a zipper.
Yeah,
and I've had a lot of bad zipper experiences.
Popping. So. My worry is the boat will pop, and if the gear's inside the boat will sink. What do you think about that? Like, let's say you get a hole in the boat.
Why would that be any different? I don't understand. If it's a multi-chambered craft, whether the gear is sitting in the boat, like strapped into the boat, or sitting inside the tube, it shouldn't make a difference.
Yeah, I guess so. It just feels like if you pop the boat, it's just going to be like, it's going to be full of water and just be kind of difficult to deal with. But I guess it would be the same.
It feels to me like it would increase the likelihood you pop the boat, because instead of, you know, if you have tubes that are just filled with air and you hit something, there's space for the tubes to compress and expand. And now it's like you hit something and your tube could push in against something hard that you have inside the tube and hit it. You know what I mean?
Okay.
So that to me feels like the weird part about it, but I don't know. I'd like to try it. It seems clever to me. It just feels like there's probably some downsides. But there is on all cool things, right?
Yeah, I need to try it too. I don't get it. It doesn't make sense to me that putting the gear inside the tubes, but I've never tried it. I worry too that you would put it in the tubes thinking it stays dry. I think you need to put it inside dry bags inside the tubes. That would work.
I mean, if they're airtight, they should be watertight, right?
They should be, but again, if you, let's say you put your down jacket in the tube and you get a hole on a rock, then your down jacket gets wet.
Does it?
Yeah, because it's inside the tube. So if your tube
But
leaks.
if you okay, so if you nick your tube, like let's say you're in your inflatable kayak and you nick it going down, it leaks air. Air goes out, but water doesn't go inside your tube. Like you don't get water in your tube
It's
because
just.
the air pressure of the wa air going out is pushing. It's a one-way deal at that point.
I
There's
think
more
it.
air. There's more pressure of the air going out than water going in.
Maybe with nicking it, but if you put a hole in it, there's definitely going to get water in there. The time I've been on it with a pack rafter and they blew it, they put a hole in a tube, water got in the tube. So in my limited data set, I've seen water go inside a tube. And so the people then had gear inside the tubes, but luckily it was inside dry bags inside the tube, so it didn't get wet.
Interesting. We need to
So,
test one out. So
yeah.
somebody who has one, you just got to send it to us so we can give it a try, I guess.
There you go.
Yep. And
So
Thor, I emailed Thor. Somebody suggested we email Thor from Alpaca and get him on the show. He just got back and said he's willing to do it. So we'll get him on. Maybe he can talk more
great.
about it.
That'd
Because
be
we thank you, Max, for emailing us. We regularly talk about alpacas as highly uneducated people who know nothing about them, and we just make things up for about pack rafts. So we should get somebody who can talk intelligently about them on the show.
Agreed. We got another email from I think it's Madeline is probably how you say it, or Maddie, and she's a guide up here in Idaho, and she had heard us talk about trip logs and keeping track of your logbook, basically your boating logbook, and she created one, looks like an in like a Google kind of a thing, and it's awesome, like it's super clever, it's well thought out. She's been using it for a long time. We're gonna I think put a link up to that on the website. So thanks for sending that to us. Hope you're out guiding and getting work on the Middle Fork or wherever it is you work. But thanks for sending that over. It's great.
Cool. You guys want to move on to the topic of the week?
Yeah, let's do
Sure.
it.
Do we introduce this one, Priscilla?
Yeah, I'll introduce it. So, we're driving to California for a week of vacation with some friends recently. And then on the way back home after the OTT's 50th anniversary celebration in Grants Pass, I was like, what topics would you guys want to hear for a podcast? Because they all listen to River Talk, embarrassingly enough. And so they said, well, we'd love to hear everyone's thoughts on salvaging like a paddling trip. We were just coming back from a paddling trip where we had to go to plan B, C, and D. And they were wondering what other people do when like flows don't line up, weather's not great for an overnighter, your group size changes, unexpected things happen. What do you do when you have to do something in the limited days that you all have off together and you can't really reschedule? Obviously, not all types of trips have this problem. Usually, if you plan to do a Maine salmon overnight rafting trip, typically it works out. But on trips like where you're traveling with a bunch of kayakers or rafters to do Sierra's runs, sometimes when it rains, stuff gets really high and it's no longer in the range that you want to boat it at. Or sometimes it doesn't get warm enough for whatever reason and the water's too low. Or sometimes you drive up a road and the road no longer is accessible because of a tree or a landslide. So, what do you do when that happens? How do you salvage a trip?
So first, I think even the Maine salmon, you can have problems because if there's a fire, smoke closes the
That's true.
river, high water, or the Rogue, for example, last year. Well, last year we didn't have to cancel trips, but a few years ago, people would have to move their plans. And so I think it can happen anytime. And I thought about this a lot since you suggested this as a topic. Once it happens, there's not much you can do. There's the obvious stuff, like bring a guidebook with you and have backup plans. But I think a lot of it is on the front end. How you explain a trip to your friends. Go, hey guys, we're planning to go run the Middle Fork of the Feather is a classic one, Priscilla. I know you've been trying to go do that one.
Or the
Yeah.
Illinois. The
Or the
Illinois is
Illinois.
like, to think about it, because I think when I first thought about this topic, to me, it was like, well, this is just these elitist paddlers going off to paddle like things in the unknown, like this super random stuff that is where this is really a thing, but the Illinois is a great example of a pretty commonly run river where this happens all the time.
Yeah, so you just say, you know, whoever the organizer is, it's a lot about planning ahead. Go, hey guys, we're hoping to do the Illinois April 10th through 13th, but it's likely going to cancel. So you should wrap your brain around that. And our backup plan is we can always do the Rogue. You know, or I'd rather do if it was me and the Illinois cancels is go to the Smith, because there's always something to run on the Smith. So I'd say, hey guys, we'll do instead. Let's go to the Smith. You know, camp out, do a bunch of day runs, but letting everybody know ahead of time who's on the trip, like, we're hoping to do this river. That's the plan, but we may end up doing something else that's like different. And I've always seen this as an opportunity to go run some really obscure rivers, things I wouldn't normally run.
Yeah, I would agree. It seems like for a lot of those kinds of conditions, like the things you're talking about too high, too low, weather, whatever, it really comes down to planning ahead. You know, if you're doing the kind of thing where there's a real chance that those kinds of things are going to put you, like, stop your trip, then you should already have plan B when you start organizing plan A. It's like kind of what Zach said, like, this trip is, it may or may not happen. Like, we're going to plan for these dates. Like, any trip you do in the Illinois in the spring, it's like, well, we're going to plan on these days and hopefully it works out. And if it doesn't, we're going to go do the Smith, or we're going to go do the Rogue, or whatever. I think you just build the backup into it. And the other thing I would say about that is, I think it's good when you're in that planning phase, because I just went through this with a different trip, is build in your parameters when you're starting the planning process. So if this is above this level, we're not going to go. You know, don't leave it until it's kind of like a game time decision on, like, at least like flow stuff, because it's always tempting to go. But if 2 months ago you said, like, we're not going to run it above this, when you're not, like, that emotionally connected to it, you're way more likely to make good decisions.
And I'm a
I think
big
that's a
fan of,
great
I'll run
tip.
something super low. You know,
We
like
know, Zach.
I'll go anyway. I'm
Like
like,
suffer fest low. We
yeah, I'm like, we're
know.
going. I mean, like for me, it's,
I
I
actually think
want
you prefer it.
to a little bit because it makes it harder.
Does it?
I mean, physically harder. But like I don't like to run things too high because like you get to the Illinois and it's like 4 grand. You're like, ah, this group isn't ready for it. That's when you have to call it, you know. But almost anybody can bash down the Illinois at 500. I mean, not almost anybody, but like
Just requires a certain mindset.
it requires mindset. But like for me, I'm more about seeing the place than the whitewater itself. So like if I want to go right now, I'm super focused on the North Fork of the John Day up in the wilderness. Like the whitewater is probably really cool in there, but I really want to see the canyon more than anything. And so I might bash down to the low water where, you know, where I don't want to go high water because like it could be dangerous.
We just did the North Fork of the John Day.
The section above there.
Yeah, I know. We did the section below where you were
Yeah,
talking about. Yeah.
yeah. I want to do that section too, but I probably wouldn't bash down out at low water. I'd probably wait for good conditions.
Yeah. I wouldn't, no. That wouldn't be worth bashing down at low water.
Yeah, like I've done Smith trips where it's just stupid low, but on the Smith there's always somewhere to go. And the North Fork, even when it's low, it's beautiful. You
Yeah.
know, so I'll run the North Fork super low with friends just to hang out with friends and see a beautiful place.
So something that all those tips are definitely, I think those are great. And something that Jacob practices all the time, and I'm trying to get better at practicing. I think setting the parameters well in advance is something that we've decided is really important because I have different parameters than him. And through our, I don't know, 6 years of boating together now, we've figured out that that was a source of conflict for some of these trips that didn't work out. It's like he'd be more willing to do certain types of trips than I would as a backup plan. And now we come to an understanding like, oh, if this doesn't work out, then these are the types of trips that I would like to do as a backup. And these are the types of trips that he'd like to do as a backup and try to find a middle ground. And then sometimes, you know, I'm helping run shuttle on some and if he needs to run shuttle so that I can do another one, we do that and it works out really well. And obviously, you can do that with a larger group too. Or you just have a group that's up for whatever and that makes for a really fun trip because nobody cares. They're just going to have a good time. Something that we ran into in California this last trip is that, and kind of how we ended up down the lines of plan D. Is we started pushing to head farther south quicker so that we could get to some of the more exciting runs. But then we ran into weather that was a bit more severe than was forecasted, but we had anticipated it. And then so the entire few drainages that we were near got extremely high. And so that was where we felt like having a guidebook and the American Whitewater app and a wet state, like, you know, three people on a phone doing research on different websites, plus someone reading a guidebook, trying to figure out what drainage we needed to head to have reasonable water for the next day so that we weren't just kind of like camping in the rain and not enjoying ourselves for an entire day. And ended up in a lot of driving, but we were able to at least salvage the trip and go kayaking every single day of the trip, which I was pretty impressed we were able to do it. But having a team that all had that mindset of be flexible, know what resources we have, figure out what drainage we're going to go to, and then we'll figure out what runs in that drainage we're going to do, and that sort of thing was definitely how it worked out.
Priscilla, I'm super curious about your plan A, B, C, and D. Do you mind walking us through that? I'm just curious where you guys were thinking about going, like,
yeah,
what set you off?
Well, the original plan was to do the Middle Fork Feather. And that we've been trying to do for maybe 2 years or 3 years. And it's always around this time of year where it ends up being higher than what we're comfortable with. And I think last year, maybe it was too low. I can't remember. So it's always something. So all of us knew going into it that the feather was going to be too high because there was rain coming in. And even if it wasn't too high, we weren't very interested in suffering through rainy camping. We'd rather wait and enjoy that one when it was kind of better conditions. So then our second plan was to go south. We were going to do the McLeod, the Sacramento, then do the multi-day Mill Creek, and then head down for South Branch. And then I think after that, we didn't have much planned other than just kind of like figuring out if people wanted to keep boating or if we wanted a rest day or go to Lassen National Park or whatnot. So with a large group, you obviously have multiple expectations and desires, and some of the group had to get back earlier than the other half of the group. And they're like, oh, what if we just push on and do the Sacramento and then we head down to do Mill Creek a day early and then we would have another buffer day for South Branch. And all of us were like, yeah, that seems reasonable. But we didn't anticipate the weather coming in as much as it did. So if we had waited an additional day, then we probably would have been okay with the original plan A, but then it would have put pressure on half the group that was more time limited. So we made a call that as a group, we probably should have just waited another day and done like another trip before the Mill Creek, and we probably wouldn't have run into the high water issues. So then the next day we went down to the South Branch, and that also was higher than what at least half of the group wanted to run it at. So and when I say plan A, B, C, and D, I'm mostly referring to Jacob and I and a few other in our group that are not the class five plus boaters that don't mind high water trips. So when we went down there, Middle Feather was too high for what we wanted to do. Then we got to Mill Creek. Mill Creek was too high for anybody to do. It was brown and flooded. And then the South Branch was the highest that a local really good class five plus boater had seen it. So we decided not to run it. So all of our plan A's did not work. But after that, our plan, I would say B, C, and D, was looking at a guidebook as to where we were and just kind of figuring out what runs would be interesting to check out, even if they were way too low, because at that point the weather had passed and stuff was dropping. Mm-hmm. So we ended up doing the Scott River, which we'd never done before. Well, at least some of us hadn't done it before.
Yeah,
really, really classic. Fun. Did like Kidder Creek, mm-hmm, that was really low, but really awesome. Did a section of the Upper Trinity just because we were in the area, which was interesting and pretty continuous. And then Oh, Shackelford Creek. There's a really cool waterfall there that was a cool park in Huck. But I think there's a more serious run on that creek as well. We just chose to pick off the one drop.
Which guidebook did you use?
So the guidebook we wished that we had was the New School guide, like the coastal side. And then we also had the Stanley Holbeck guidebook, which we didn't have, but we were just kind of looking online. But those would have been the two books that we should have had. And then A Wet State, obviously, is an invaluable resource for California runs in general.
When I lived in California and paddled there, it was before phones had internet, so you couldn't just look things up like that. Or flows. You couldn't find flows. You'd have to drive to the river and check it out sometimes. That Holbeck and Stanley book saved so many trips. You know, we'd drive to a river. It would be too high, too low. And we just open up and say, what's near here? That book is
amazing.
That's
what's awesome about a guidebook. It's almost much easier than going online because it's by region generally.
Yeah.
So, if you don't have a guidebook already, you should probably get one. And, you know, just because you have a smartphone doesn't mean you'll always have internet. That was one of the funny things on our trip as well, as we were trying to get internet in this really, really small town called Downeyville. It's just in the Yuba drainage.
You guys drove all over the place.
Oh, yeah. And we were just trying to get...
In Downeyville?
We did Polly Creek.
Cool. Super fun.
Yeah. It's a super cool town, but it's basically all the original buildings and roads from when they had like wagons and horses, because the roads are really kind of too small for cars. And there's one shop on this really narrow road that has free Wi-Fi that we'd like gone there and bought some food the day before. And the next morning we're just like all huddled in this town that's closed because it's Memorial Day, like trying to get these little tiny pieces of Wi-Fi so we could see flows before taking off on our next drive. It was kind of hilarious.
I think with Downeyville too, back in the day in the 1800s, they voted between either Downeyville or Sacramento being the capital of California. And if I remember right, Downeyville lost by like a couple votes.
What?
Imagine Downeyville being the capital of California.
That's crazy. Yeah. I'm glad it's not.
Yeah.
I think it's a little town how it is. Yeah. Yeah, that's pretty cool. So I guess another thing to talk about is like, so there's all these natural conditions that can influence your trip and make you have to go down the list of what to do and how to keep the paddling going on a planned paddling trip. But what happens when like your gear fails and there's not a REI or Next Adventure or something nearby that you can go and just, you know, demo a boat or rent some gear or buy new gear? Like, what types of things do you guys carry on longer trips in areas where there's not like these stores you can go to, so that if some part of your gear failed, you wouldn't have to just stop paddling?
I don't carry anything. like an extra spray skirt? If my spray skirt fails, I'm done.
It totally depends on the trip, right? Like, that's, you know, every trip requires kind of different equipment. But I'm sort of with Zach. Like, I'm not taking too much stuff.
I think having a spare paddle is nice just for on the river safety. Yeah. But like, that's in the back of my boat. But in terms of like an extra helmet or PFD or whatever, it's probably smart to have them. But I mean, if I had lost mine or forgot it, I'm like, hey guys, I'm out of this trip. I'm going home.
Yeah.
I think this question is really valuable for people who, I mean, have very limited vacation. You have 2 weeks of vacation a year. You plan a trip with your buddies for one of your weeks. Everybody's getting together. And you don't want it to be a disaster. And I think sometimes they are. That's just the reality of it. Sometimes the trip is magical and perfect, but sometimes they're a disaster. And sometimes you guys drive to a river you don't think is going to have enough water, and it's absolutely perfect, and you have the trip of your life. Mm-hmm. So it's just like, life's unfair. And I think sometimes it works out and sometimes it doesn't. And, you know, I think some of the best times I've had are when we didn't get to go on a river and we end up going for a hike and laughing and telling stories. And, you know, I think it's a lot of attitude, you know.
Yeah.
Same thing if you go to the Oahe, and we had a bunch of people call us this year because the Oahe shot to 4,000 and they kept wanting to know if 4,000 was safe. And I'm like, I don't know. I don't know you. I can't tell you if it's safe or not for you. But I was like, you can go and see what the flow is going to be that day. And if it doesn't go, I mean, you're in the middle of a cool part of Oregon. Like, if you choose not to go, there's other things to do in the area. So I think, you know, somewhat not being super stuck to boating and being able to roll with the punches, realizing that it's nature and it changes. And, you know, if you want predictable, I mean, that's the Rogue. I mean, I can't think of any river as predictable as the Rogue.
Dam release ones.
Yeah.
You always know. And yeah, I guess we did end up on like Tobin and Loban because we knew for sure that those were in too.
Yep.
Which is, I mean, that was a no stress backup plan. Just got to do that and then reset and figured out the other ones that were more difficult down the road. I think what you said about having the right attitude and being okay with doing something that's maybe not kayaking related, like going hiking or just exploring an area is important too. Cause there's been a lot of times where, like, again, a good example is going to the California Sierras and not having flows work out. And we're like, oh, well, we're near Yosemite. Like, let's just go to Yosemite for a day and then see if something drops into a flow that we're comfortable with. And that was super fun. So yeah, having backup plans that aren't kayaking related, depending on what time of year you're going and the likelihood of your plans not working out, is a good way to make it so that you're not wasting your limited vacation days and still getting to do something cool. Something on these long car trips, since Jacob and I are really trying to do vacation day trips where if something went wrong with our gear or car, the trip would in some ways be kaput. We don't always bring these things, but if I think about it, I often bring just like a kit. Gorilla tape is just a staple that lives in each one of our cars. We have a roll of it in each of our cars for everything. And then like zip ties, like the really strong ones. Bitchathane, which is roofing material that you can use to patch a kayak. Aquaseal, which has a pretty quick curing time. So if you get like a big tear in your dry suit or dry top, you can use that. But Gorilla Tape also works really well. I actually did that recently for a tear in my dry top. If you're an inflatable person, Tear Aid is great for IK raft repair in a stitch. Sewing kit is something that I just always keep in a car because it's like you can get it at the dollar store and just like throw it in your glove box. And something that I've started bringing recently, and I think this is more of a thing if you have old cars that you're a little bit worried about, or if you leave your lights on a lot and you're worried about not being able to jump start your car. We bring like a jump start kit, extra oil, like a small thing of power steering fluid, and like a, I forget what it's called, slime, like a tire repair kit. So like if you popped your tire, you could fill it with the fluid. And then we have like a really small air compressor to pump the tire back up. Just because those are things where it's like, when you're driving on really remote roads, like you're not going to be able to call AAA. You're going to end up like hiking to a town sort of deal. So it's always nice to think about bringing those things. And I think in the last 5 years, I really started doing that just like, because I didn't want to get stuck by myself in the middle of nowhere.
That's all super smart. And Tear Aid actually can fix a Gore-Tex jacket. It can fix a tent. Yeah. It's incredibly useful for a lot of things.
Yeah.
And the car kit stuff is, that's just like normal common sense. Yeah. There's this stuff you can buy that it comes in a can and you poke it up to your car, your tire, and it coats the inside of it if there's a small leak.
Yeah, that's what the slime or goo or whatever it was. I don't know exactly what it's called, but that's part of our little kit. And like all this stuff, like the biggest kit that we have is like, we have a, you know, a little square for our first aid kit and a square for our car kit. And those are the two biggest space taking up things, but all the other things are really small and can just fit in your glove box, but can definitely make a big difference if you're not wanting to waste days driving to a town to go to a store or whatnot.
So, and Priscilla, you're being very proactive about this, helping people ahead of time. I guarantee every one of these things you have in your kit, like you wished you had at some point. Now that's why it's in your kit.
Oh yeah, definitely.
So this isn't like, hey, here's a good kit of things like I think you should bring. Like you've been stuck on the side of the road, or you've like been on a paddling trip where you needed to fix something. Like if I only had some aqua seed, like I could keep paddling. You almost have to learn this stuff by experience, like
Definitely
wishing you had
ingrains
it at
it.
one point.
Yeah. If you have an experience where you needed it, you'll never forget it again. Do you guys have
Awesome.
any other things that you like think about bringing or think about doing to save a trip?
I just go back to like it just have cool friends. Like or just
helps.
setting expectations and people that are cool with like rolling with the punches really helps. And I've been on a couple of trips where people really have to paddle this one river and it's been on their mind. And when it doesn't happen, it just brings their mood down and it affects everybody. And then they leave the trip early, or they're just like kind of grumpy because we didn't get to run a certain river, because they're fine running at high water, but a few people aren't. And so, just really appreciating your cool friends that roll with the punches.
Yeah, I mean, I think that sounds about right. Is just be able to kind of have a plan B. Like the best thing is just have a plan B. And then as far as like the equipment and stuff, I think you listed most of those things. And also just check your equipment before you go. Like if your equipment's in good working order, the likelihood you need any of that stuff goes way down. So just do good maintenance on your stuff and check it before you leave the house, and the likelihood that you need to fix it goes way down.
Yeah,
So,
definitely. The other one
but
is,
the car kit stuff is super important, and toe straps.
yeah.
Like
Toe
toe
straps are
strap
huge.
is super important. So if you
Yeah.
got a big believer on toe straps.
Yeah, I actually am gonna add that to my kit now that you said that. There's been a few times where we've gotten stuck in mud or whatnot, or it would have been helpful to tow another car, and we just used NRS straps, which work well until you shock load them.
And certain places, exactly. Certain places that I go, I'll also throw a chainsaw.
Yeah.
Plus,
So
it's just really cool to carry a chainsaw.
You feel pretty
If
rad.
you bring a chainsaw, make sure you tie it on the roof rack next to the kayaks, because that looks
That's
super. Don't
right.
hide it in the trunk. Make sure everybody knows you're carrying a chainsaw, because it
Along
looks
with your
cool.
extra gas and water canteens and generator.
So, when
but
you
there's been
actually
once or
have
twice
to,
where that was pretty helpful to
when
get
you
that.
actually have to use a chainsaw to solve a problem, you feel really cool when you have it.
Oh, you feel so cool.
Oh
No, I
yeah.
mean, it justifies the whole trip, but like you could not even go boating. If you got out there, got to the river, but you chainsawed your way out there, then you obviously were rad. Like you were doing rad things.
Oh, it's
So,
an extra bonus part of the trip.
yeah. Cool. Well, should we hit gear of the week? Sweet.
I'll
Zach, what do
start.
you got?
Yeah, I was on the Chutco last week. We have those Wing Jimbo kayaks I probably talked about before. They're like the Sotar ATV. They're big, basically just big, same size tube all around, 10.5 foot boats. And
Are these the squares
there's
they're a big rec they're a big
rectangles?
rectangle.
they're big reg yeah they're big rectangles. They're like Cronins with less rocker. That's another way to think of them. And
Like no rocker, right? Almost. I mean,
well,
like 2 inches or something.
the ATV has almost no rocker. I doubled the rocker on these wing boats, so
So
they're not
from
as
1 to 2 inches.
yeah or maybe from 1.5 to 3, something like
Yeah.
that. There's not much rocker. What we've been doing on Chutco recently is having our guests in empty boats, and guides have been taking all the gear, and so we had these things heavily loaded down with a lot of gear, and had a great it's a great boat. I had a great time with it. It handled with weight well, went over drops well. I'm a big fan of that boat. So if you're looking for either a really stable inflatable kayak for yourself just for day trips, or something to do multi days in, and you want to bring a lot of stuff, I'm now that I've actually used it, I designed the boat, so I should like it, but now that I've used it for real, I'm a
But have
huge
you
fan
used
of
it
it.
on something with more than like 100 CFS? Like
Oh,
how would
Aaron,
it
why are
work
you?
on say like doing like a main like you're gonna go to a self-support 6 day main salmon,
This is what everybody
and you're
asks
going
me.
10,000 CFS, like then
Okay.
how's
First of all, the Chetco was at least 200 CFS this year, so I want to make that very clear. It
it
wasn't 100.
work?
I mean, I took this boat to Tajikistan, in Kyrgyzstan last fall and paddled it on a bunch of big water rivers, and it worked awesome.
Cool.
On the bigger volume rivers, so like when I'm running it on the Chudco or like low volume stuff, I like to be on my knees a lot. I like sit on the tube. I move around the boat a lot. I'm super active, high sliding all the time. When we had it in Tajikistan and Kyrgyzstan, we had leg braces with, there's a thwart for the feet. So having like a foot brace, a high back seat. I copied the seat off of those orange torpedo duckies, a really big seat that goes high up your back, which is really sweet. For big water, it's nice to have a foot brace and knee braces. And it paddles awesome. It's really cool. Stable. And on the hardest stuff we ran, I'd be like, I'll take the black boat, which the black boat is the Jimbo. Because we had that in the back rafts. And the back rafts are pretty tippy. And I'm a fan of paddles big water well. Cool. Yeah, like if you did a 6-day Maine salmon self-support IK trip, it'd be a great boat.
Awesome. I had a couple things this week just because it's been a little while. Yeah. And I've been around some cool stuff in the last couple weeks. So first, I picked up a Tributary Spud. It's their like little 7-foot IK that I think they originally designed for kids. And then, you know, it turns out adults like them. So they have sort of redesigned them, I think, a little bit to fit adults better. But I bought it for my 9-year-old so he'd have a little IK to paddle. But we were doing a 1-day like down the rogue trip a couple weeks ago, down the wild section. And I just picked this thing up like the night before. So I decided to paddle the Spud. And it was awesome. Like, it is so freaking fun. I love the inflatable kayaks we've designed, and I think they're really great for what we do. But this thing was, it was super, all the rapids in it were super, super fun. Like,
I put thigh braces in it. You ran rainy in it.
Yeah, I ran rainy down the middle on it, and it was super fun for that. Like, the thing boofs like crazy. It's wild. It's a blast. I can roll it.
What?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
It was super fun. So,
did you ever combat roll it?
I did not combat roll it. I just rolled it. Yeah, so that's a good point. I did not combat roll it.
I really, like, I've heard of people being able to roll inflatable kayaks. I can't do it. I've tried. I've heard of people doing it. I've never heard of a combat roll.
I've combat rolled like a couple times, an old Tomcat or something.
Okay.
We had a client bring one on a lower salmon a bunch of years ago, and I went surfing in a hole and just got pummeled, but I was able to roll it in the hole and then eventually surf out of it.
Nice.
But I mean, that's it, when you're in a hole, it's a whole lot easier to roll up too.
So Eric, your boat's the exact opposite of mine. Mine's like a big tank. Like our gear of the week. Mine is a big tank for gear. Yours is almost like a one person playboat. Does that sound about right?
Honestly, paddling it feels like I'm in my playboat. My feet are right at the very end of it. Like I'm sitting in it and my feet are literally like tucked up into the very nose of the thing. Like there's, you know, 2 or 3 inches of like inflatable tube in front of my toes.
Do you think it was fun because you're a really, really good paddler in kayaks, in inflatable kayaks especially? Or do you think a beginner would like this boat too?
I think a beginner would like it. It would depend on what you're paddling. When you get into like hydraulics and stuff, it gets pretty squirrely. Mm-hmm. So like going through Mule Creek and going through the coffee pot in it was like full on, like kind of spicy. It was a good time. It's always wanting to like mystery move on you, which in an IK is kind of rad. I think it would depend, but I mean, I'm going to put my 9-year-old in it and let him paddle around. I think it'll be perfect for him.
Yeah. It's a boat designed for a 9-year-old.
Yeah, it is. But as an adult, it's a pretty good time.
Yeah. Cool.
Sounds really fun. So maybe you should offer them for like, the extra spicy guests.
Right. No, that conversation has come up. I was shocked by how much fun it was. Huh. And the price on them is awesome. I think they retail for like $3.99 or something.
Oh, wow.
Crazy. Like,
they're crazy. It's crazy cheap. But the construction on them is rock solid. I mean, the construction seems similar to everything else I've seen from Air, Tributary, et cetera, like Bomber. Yeah.
So I think their warranty is pretty bomber, too.
It is. It's really good.
Want to say Air is a great company. So anything you buy from Air, they back up the product. They make good products and they back it up.
Yeah. No, that's been my experience as well. The other thing that I got to use kind of firsthand now in a couple trips was the Fireside Outdoor Pop-Up Pit, which it's this new fire pan that's out. It's aluminum. And you know, like fold-out chairs, like we take on all of our trips? Uh-huh. it folds out kind of like that. So it like folds in, it accordions in, so it's this tiny little thing, and then it accordions out, and it's a little smaller in sort of square, like square inches than like a roll table, and sits kind of down low. But the craziest part about it is it's all aluminum, so it's really light, and it doesn't conduct heat well. So like you can pick it up when it's on fire and like move it around, because one, it doesn't weigh anything, and two, the legs don't get. But the like a normal fire pan, so like an aluminum, like an NRS or a all the fire pans we use. They're like kind of hard bottomed, and then maybe they're like spot welded around the sides so they float or whatever, but it's a hard bottom. This, what they've done, the bottom of where you like put the fire is in a aluminum screen. So think like a screen door screen, except made out of aluminum. So the whole bottom breathes. So you put coals in it, and they just get like all of them get going insanely fast, burn evenly. And then the whole thing has a grill that goes over the top, and it weighs like 5 pounds or something. It doesn't weigh anything. It's super light. Because it has air coming from the bottom, it burns like cleaner, so you don't get as much smoke. You still get smoke, but less than in a normal fire pan. In our use of them, I mean, they are not yet commercial use friendly. Like, it's not robust enough. Like, if I gave it to a river crew and said use this for 4 trips, it would come back and be demolished probably.
Yeah, I'm looking at it online right now. It looks super
But on a
cool.
private trip, they're bomber. Like, they're awesome. Like, totally perfect for private trips. So I'm thinking about selling like my personal fire pan and buying one of these for personal use. It's super cool.
Cool.
I was really surprised by it. And then final thing, we've kind of gone back and forth on the Bedrock sandals. I finally now like use them on some river trips, and I think like actually broke them in, and I'm kind of falling in love with them. When you first get them, they're pretty uncomfortable, but once you start breaking them in and actually using them like on day-to-day river trips and kind of get used to how they sit on your feet, I'm becoming a bigger and bigger fan the more I wear them.
Are they better than your beloved Chaco Zong things?
Well, different, right? So the Zong, I mean, nothing beats those.
Okay.
But
Just want to make sure
those
that
are like,
the Chaco Zong is still the
those are
gold
not a full
standard.
on, like, I'm going hardcore river guiding on stuff I
Okay.
might be swimming on and need a sandal that's going to stay on my feet when I swim.
Okay.
That's not those Zong things. And these are like, you're actually like river guide sandal where you need something that's on your feet, guaranteed to stay on your feet.
Cool. Hey, Eric. Thanks for the update on sandals. Let's go back to the pop-up pit. I'm looking at it online right now. What happens to the ash? Does ash fall on the ground?
No, that's the crazy. Well, so they have a little fire pan or a little like fire blanket that Velcros in the bottom of the thing, like on the ground. So if anything does fall through the screen, it goes onto the little fire blanket that like straps in at the bottom. But from my experience, like it was very little actually went through the screen,
Yeah,
like
I'm looking
very
at it
little.
online right now. It says heat shield added. For leave no trace fires. And I didn't see that heat shield.
Well, the one we used had it. And it just like Velcroed in the bottom, and it was really clever. But the coolest part was you could have the fire. I mean, it could be like a raging fire, and you could just walk over, grab the legs, pick it up, move it around camp wherever you wanted, and set it down again.
Really like that. That's sweet.
Yeah, it was rad. So.
Cool. Another thing for my list of when I stop kayaking and start rafting.
Well, and for lightweight, like that was the thing that I was so impressed with is like. It doesn't, it folds down so small, it takes up barely any space in your car. It's going to take up barely any space on your boat. Like, it weighs probably 25% of what a standard fire pan weighs or less. Like,
Yeah, no, it
pretty
looks
cool.
cool. It comes with a little bag. It packs down pretty small.
Yeah. So, again, I don't think commercial use friendly. It's just not going to be durable enough. But for, the private user who's going to take care of their own stuff, I think it's a pretty cool deal.
I'm looking
Really clever.
at the thing too. It says meets the regs. It was 600 and or 576 square inches of burn area at an elevated base and 3.5 inch sides. The pop-up pit meets BLM and Forest Service regulations for fire pans.
Oh, and the other thing was it kind of goes with what I said before, but when you're done using it, it cools off like instantly.
Yeah, it's aluminum.
You can pack it up
That's
right
always
away.
nice.
Awesome. Yeah.
Yeah, that's sweet.
So
Cool.
anyway, there you have it.
Awesome. See, I have two things. The Helinox chair, which is a really lightweight, small chair. the reason I like it is for trips like I was recently on with five people, one car. You don't have a lot of room, but you still are doing car camping. So it's nice to have certain amenities. This little chair folds up, I don't know, it's maybe like a foot long and I don't know, 4 or 5 inches wide. Not very big, super small, super lightweight. I mean, honestly, if you really liked having a chair, you could probably pack it in the back of your kayak for an overnighter. And it was really sturdy, surprisingly. And I was skeptical when our friend Ben brought it out. I was like, what is that thing? And it's like, oh, wow, this is actually a pretty cool chair. And there's cheap Amazon versions, which got really good reviews. So I actually just bought one for like $35 instead of having our, like, you know, Walmart Fred Meyer camp chairs. Try to switch over to the smaller ones so that our car is not so packed on our week-long trips with friends.
Do those have the bungee cords that are in the leg, you know, that help you put all the leg pieces together?
That was the other part I loved about it, is because you're not going to miss, like, your pieces. It's basically one piece with bungee cords like you would for a tent pole, and then just a covering. And apparently they have a rocking chair version of this, which looks awesome.
So I just bought a couple Big Agnes, basically the same thing. I mean, same idea, you know, their version of that. We used them on one trip for 3 days, and on one of the chairs, the bungee cord is like all like frayed almost all the way through.
Oh no.
Yeah. Cause you take them apart and then you kind of like fold them in like you would with tent poles. Right.
Yeah.
And wherever they bent against the legs, it looked like it just frayed the bungee cord, like 3 days of use.
Oh man.
So, I mean, they're great. I'm sending it back and they're going to swap it out or whatever, but it just, that still seems, with those kinds of things with bungee cords, it seems like a weak point that inevitably the bungee cord is going to explode on you.
Yeah.
But the chairs are super comfortable. I like that. I like that idea. The lightweight and space and everything else is awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, hopefully it lasts a little longer. We'll see. Cool. But that's the cool thing about Amazon. You can always return things.
Right.
The last thing is an acupuncture pad. Listening to Lewis Geltman on Hammer Factor, seemed like he had some of the same issues that Jacob and I have with pain everywhere related to just generally getting old and still kayaking. And he recommended this acupuncture pad that he just lays on, and it helps kind of release tension and stimulate like blood flow in your muscles. And we bought one and it's pretty awesome. Huh? It's kind of weird and painful at first, but then you just kind of like relax into it. And it totally seems to be helping with a lot of like weird muscle pains that you get just from like kayaking or rowing or rapping, you know, all the things that we do to our body that's not exactly great for it.
Is it a big pad you lay on the ground and your whole body lays on it?
Okay. Yeah, so it's not full. It's not like yoga mat size. It's like 3/4 mat size. So you can lay on it and have your whole back. I guess it's half. It's like a half mat, because you can have your neck and like all the way down to your lower back covered in the pokies. So I usually do like my back, I'll lay on it, and then do like some hips and legs stuff separately, which I think, like laying on a mat that was body sized would maybe be like too stimulating. Like it might be too painful all at once when you're getting used to it. But I was pretty skeptical that it would do anything. And I actually enjoy laying on it when watching TV after work now.
Cool. So yeah, I'll put links to all this stuff. If you send me a link to that, I'll put it at the end of the show notes.
Oh yeah.
On the webpage.
I think I added some to our notes. So
cool.
Cool. Well, any other gear from anybody?
That's it for me.
Cool. Well, hey, thanks for listening to us this week. Hopefully you're going boating, getting out there, getting some of this, you know, now it's like summer weather and yet there's still some spring water. So get out there, go boating. And hopefully the three of us will be able to put our schedules together, do this again sometime in the reasonably near future. So thanks again. Go boating. River.